for the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Bouncing with that drop. KCP in the middle. Bounce, Larry. Throw that baby down.
Oh my goodness.
What hard? Are you kidding? With some anger.
How did Kyrie get out of that double team?
With the head fake. What a move by Hakeem Olajuwon.
Levine, he goes right.
Oh! Does anybody know how to post videos?
Welcome back in to the Drop Step Podcast, episode 35. I want to say shout out to Shaq Fu Radio, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Home team Brandon Leak, what's up world? Here with Book the Hook. What's up, Book?
What up?
Houston, what's up, Houston?
What's good with y'all?
The B-Dog, Brandon Harper, what's up, B-Dog?
I would have been doing better with a win last night, well, but I'm good.
We'll see if we can get you through game one of the regular season. Big time Laker fan, Hawks fans in here, and NBA fans as well. Here on episode 35, we'll get to the season opening with the champions without Kawhi Leonard, how they performed, how their opponent performed without one of their star players, what that means for them and the league. We'll get to Michael Jordan giving his opinion on the Today Show about Steph Curry and whether he is or isn't a Hall of Famer. Did LeBron drop the ball with the China stuff? And the Atlanta Hawks get ready to start 2019-2020. But the season opened up two games, two good games when you talk about how it was supposed to lay out. Supposed to lay out, the defending world champions open up with Zion Williamson and the Pelicans. That didn't happen. They did open up, but Zion out 6 to 8 weeks with surgery for a torn meniscus. Either way, still a competitive game, still a good game, goes to overtime. Raptors, they win 130-122 in overtime. So it was a good basketball game, an exciting game, but you did not have superstar talent and power on the floor.
First of all, man, I'm going to have to get into mid-season conditioning because – I forgot how late these games be on, man. For real, man. So, so caught the highlights, man, and everything looked good from both of them, man. I was telling B-Dog earlier, I just think it's going to be the type of situation where cats are going to be praised for scratching 100 against the Clippers, man. Like, they defensively, they have everything that any team in the NBA could want, man. Like, it's going to be a tough feat to score on those guys at will. So, 1 point to the Clippers. I'm sure the Lakers will strike back, but great opening to the season.
Man, you say that they got everything that everybody needs as far as on defensive end. The only thing that I see from them boys that other teams aren't showing is heart and hustle.
They got a lot of that.
Which means that every team could have it, but they've got a lot of heart and hustle going from the starting lineup through their bench. They've got a 6th, 7th, and 8th man on their bench that could come in there and still put up points for them. And you haven't even seen Paul George yet. So, like, to me, it's going to be tough in the West trying to get past them Clippers. I know you're a Lakers fan in here, but it's going to be hard for them for the late shows to pull it out.
Well, it's going
to
be tough, and I think it's going to be tough in the West, period. Like I said, it's a long season. There are a lot of things, unforeseen things that take place during the season that kind of, you know, shake up the league, whether it be injuries or whatnot. Obviously, we don't wish injury on anybody, but we understand the history of a lot of these top-notch players that – some of them don't make it through a full season because they have little knick-knack injuries, even with the Lakers. But one thing that kind of that really got me yesterday was obviously we understand Lou Will. We understand Pat Beverly and Montrezl Harrell. But when I looked at the landslide of the bench scoring between those both teams, I understand that the Clippers had a better bench. Mm-hmm. 60 to 17 or 14, that was the score of the two benches. That is absolutely horrific.
That's what y'all planned for when you decided to go and get AD and let everybody go.
Well, that's going to improve when you have when you have Kyle Kuzma come back, he'll be inserted into the starting lineup, and Danny Green will be on the bench. And so your bench is going to be better. So better days are coming for the Lakers. When Rajon Rondo comes back, Avery Bradley will be on the bench. So the Laker bench is going to change. I will say it was eye-opening how productive the Clipper bench was, because they're not going to have much change to their roster. Once Paul George comes back, that is going to be a formidable 1-2 punch, the way Kawhi Leonard came out of the gates with guns a-blazing.
But that's effort. A lot of it is just effort. They exuded, like Montrezl Harrell may not be the most talented guy out there, but he plays with heart. He plays with energy. We all know Pat Beverly. We all know his story. He'll never forget what it took for him to get to the league. And we see it every single possession. A guy could be a whole foot taller than him. He was going up – I saw multiple times he was going up against AD last night. And we all know that on paper, and we're sitting there like, that's a mismatch. But because of Pat Beverly's, you know, his scrappiness, his tenaciousness, the fact that he just won't stop – he gets under a lot of guys' skin. He's got on a LeBron skin before, and that's his game. And every team needs one or two guys like that on their squad, and the Clippers have multiple.
Man, if you were to stack the Clippers starting or the Clippers top 10, let's say they're front 10 players against every other top 10 front 10 players against any other NBA team, none of those other teams could beat them up. I feel like the Clippers would beat up every other team in the NBA. Like, because they're just hungrier. They're grittier. They impose their will, like, and that's how they're built. Like, and when you go into the game with them, like, or against them, I feel like it's partially already won because they're not going to run into teams that are as tough as they
are. Well, I won't say that, because I think no one thought that the Nuggets were going to look the way they did last season.
Put them up against the Clippers.
And I think when you have a long season like the NBA season is, things happen. You never know. That's why we play the game. Anytime you get out on the court, there are always surprise victories. I don't think the Nuggets, you know, beating the Clippers here and there is necessarily a surprise based off the team that they're coming off last year. They were the number one seed in the West last year. And the fact that they actually have more experience playing with one another, I think bodes well for that team coming into this year. I'm talking about the Nuggets.
Who's the toughest guy on the Nuggets?
Don't worry, I'll wait.
They still got Paul Millsap.
Paul Millsap or Montrezl Harrell.
Right. I'm just saying,
I think the mindset, my whole point is, I just think their mindset on who they are and what they identify with
is unlike
any other team that's in the NBA.
I'm not denying that at all. I'm with you. But I understand that it is a long season and things happen. Because we'll come back somewhere midway in the season, and we'll be talking about teams losing to teams that we never thought they'd lose to. It happens every single year. I'm not saying that the Clippers won't be good, and I'm not saying they're not the cream of the crop. But things happen. And they don't necessarily have two of their two main guys aren't necessarily the healthiest guys in the league.
Well, the Lakers, they lost 112-102. It was a game of runs. Both teams went on big-time runs. I think one of the things I noticed, too, is that Kawhi Leonard, what he did in Toronto was certainly not something that was a one-time
deal. Oh, absolutely not.
Deal.
No, sir.
He's a superstar extraordinaire, and you can make the argument he is equally as impactful as LeBron James. I don't expect LeBron James to lead the Lakers in scoring, nor should he, in my opinion. He's at the point in his career where Anthony Davis should be leading them in scoring, and LeBron James shouldn't have to carry most of the load and let the younger legs and the younger bodies do the work so that LeBron is saved for the postseason run. I don't expect LeBron James to lead them in scoring, but I think Kawhi Leonard is everything to the league and to his team that LeBron James is to the league and to his team.
He just got to get them corny commercials off the air. That Terminator commercial? Cornball. It is absolutely corny.
I'm about to die.
It's grade A corn.
But when you know, that's what I love about Kawhi, man. Like, he knows he's corny. You know what? Sign off on it. Where do I need to show up to shoot the commercial? Like, that's part of his package, man. Like, he's just, that's just him,
yeah,
and
but
I love
but
it.
But it's funnier when it's not scripted. That's scripted. So when it is scripted, it's like, come on. But when we see it, when he does it on social media, the whole, you know, what up, baby? That was funny because it wasn't scripted. But when I put it in a commercial and, you know, what it do, baby? And hasta la vista, baby. It's not funny because I understand you're trying to make money. I understand it's the branding, but it's just not funny. And you're trying to make it funny and it's just not.
That's cool. What makes it funny, because it's not.
Nah, I ain't laughing.
I'm right there with you.
That's what makes it funny, because it's not funny.
I set up every time I see that commercial, I'm sitting there looking just like this.
I do have a question about any similarities between what happened last time LeBron was in Cleveland and what he has now. You know, last time he was in Cleveland, David Blatt started off as coach and didn't look like he and LeBron were seeing eye to eye, and they looked like they were on a championship run, and they clearly were, but they were 30-13, 30-11 when they fired David Blatt. Will Frank Vogel make it to the end of the marathon with the Los Angeles Lakers?
No.
If the Lakers aren't, you know, the number one seed and things aren't going as planned.
Not with the amount of assistant coaches that he has that has head coaching pedigree.
Jason Kidd and Lionel Hollins.
I've already got other people in line that if it don't work out with you, I can easily ship you off and pull the next guy up. So I don't think he'll last long if they don't. They can't get midway through the season and have double-digit losses, in my opinion.
It's crazy. I heard Steven Jackson say this on his podcast that he's about to drop. He said, I'm not listening. Most of these guys, if we walk into a room, or if Frank Vogel and Jason Kidd walk into a room and most NBA guys look, who are they more likely to listen to? He said, him and Matt Barnes agree. We're not listening to Frank Vogel. We're finna sit up here and listen to Jason Kidd. Now, I don't know if that's because of the playing experience, but a lot of guys just don't necessarily have the faith in Frank Vogel that he knows what he's doing. And I think Frank Vogel's gonna be looking over his shoulder a lot when he gets up from that bench and he turns around and he sees Jason Kidd, who's the highest paid assistant in the league, and he sees Lionel Hollins sitting on that bench. He's like, dog, I got to be perfect because my day's a number.
The Lakers got married to Frank Vogel and moved two side chicks into the crib as well. They better be worried. They better be. Like, if you don't work out, she moving from your room down
to
your
home, bro. She comes to the master.
You better let
him
know, man. Like, man, this is a horrible situation. I don't understand how Frank Vogel
signed up for this.
I don't know how.
Well, because
I
what other job was he going to get?
I don't know. But still, like, man, it's just a tough position to be in, because just like you say, man, like, there are other trusted voices, potentially more trusted voices in the building that I can drown you out whenever I need to, you know. So, and you're dealing with a player of influence like LeBron James, who can clearly pull that trigger or influence that decision if he needs to. So he's walking on thin ice from day one.
Hey, y'all, we got plenty of ways for y'all to check us out. So make sure that you go subscribe on either Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, or even Shaq Crew Radio, which plays our podcast every Wednesday and Saturday night. You can also catch us on the YouTube channels for the Drop Set Podcast, 680 The Fan, and Atlanta Sports Set. Last but not least, make sure you check out the Drop Set on IG, Twitter, and Facebook.
Well, it was supposed to be a big time opening night, and I thought it was. I thought basketball fans were entertained. We did miss out, though, because Zion Williamson was not a part of his first game as an NBA pro. He is out 6 to 8 weeks with torn meniscus. He could come back early. Could come back in that time frame. Could come back a little bit later. We don't know. The Pelicans seem like they're a little tight about answering questions of whether it's just conditioning or did that have anything to do with this injury. And, you know, their reaction to it is something that I'm taking notice to, not necessarily the fact that they're responding to it. The question is, what is his injury done, or what is the impact of his injury not only to the Pelicans but to the NBA? There are going to be a lot of marquee games because they're in the West that he won't be a part of early. He'll miss Dallas. He'll miss the Golden State Warriors. Those are going to be matchups that a lot of fans, hardcore fans, and casual NBA fans would want to see.
Yeah, you're going to miss out on a lot of money because that name is not in the building. That's just point blank, especially earlier on in the season. A lot of people are wanting to come to these games to see what the new talents really is, especially the big stars. Number one draft pick, you want to see him play. But the thing is, his conditioning isn't the issue. It really is how much weight you're putting on your limbs. Like, there's no way a guy built like that. There's only two guys in the league who weigh more than you, and they're both 7-footers.
Yep.
You know, you should not weigh that much. You can't put that much torque and stuff on your knees, and we've seen this now where you're busting out of shoes in college, and you get into the league, you haven't even played a regular season game, and you've got a torn meniscus. Your weight is going to be an issue. It's not going to last you long.
And is that unfair? There have been plenty of guys who aren't built like him that turn a knee, that tear something in preseason, that are banged up. Are we picking on this guy?
You have to.
Because he is a big guy and there are concerns about his health status.
It's not the fact that he's a big guy. Because if he was a big guy and he was just, you know, a post-up type of guy, turn around to the basket, dunk it every now and then, and he didn't have the level of athleticism, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about him the way that we do. But it's the simple fact that he has the athleticism of a LeBron James, and he weighs 30 to 35 pounds more than LeBron James.
But he's not overweight.
He's not overweight, no. But I think it's not about the weight to me. It's about the athleticism with the weight.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that a lot of people are kind of mixing. The man jumps out of the building.
You're not going to take an expedition and try and do donuts. I'm sorry. That's just not what you're going to do.
You're going to tear that car
up. It's not built for that.
It's not.
So at the end of the day, yeah, how long you think you're going to let this run that you're going to be this big trying to make these type of moves? You need to smarten up your game or lose some of the weight so that way it's not so much pressure on the joints. That's really it.
I'm reserving judgment on this one, man, because just like all y'all said, like, we've never seen anything like this before. So it's difficult to really say and know at this point because it could be the conditioning. It could be the weight. There's no way to really know, you know. So until he comes back to show us what he's really capable of, it's tough to say, but I think the Pelicans are playing it right. You got to treat this cat like, you know, with kid gloves, you know. So you got to make sure that you handle this completely correct, and giving him more time than less, I think, is the right call. So 8 weeks, take your time, big guy. Get back when you can.
I'm just, you know, steering conversation on the podcast. I agree with Houston. I'm concerned. I'm concerned that for 82 games plus whatever you do in the playoffs year after year, he's going to be able to do that. It's one thing to do that in college or when you were built like that in high school, and things are different. The rigors of the NBA, what is going to be required of him on both ends of the floor. You know, I think I'm going to have a lot of questions. I'm going to pay attention to it. Will he be on a minutes restriction? How will they use him when he gets back? Do they have to ease him into his rookie season? I'm as a fan, going to be looking at a lot of things outside of just him being on the court. Just being honest.
And if you're a Pelicans fan, I really feel bad for you, because there's no way you're thinking about making any type of playoff pushes if your number one draft pick is missing 8 weeks out of a season. Like, and I could see this happening to him multiple seasons throughout his career, however long that actually lasts. But there's no way this guy can miss 8 weeks and you think that this team is going to make any type of real push.
Yeah. You know, it sucks. You talked about from a financial standpoint where, you know, obviously he's not going for the season, but early on, you know, you got so many of your Pelican fans hyped up, ready to come to the Smoothie King Arena to see him play. Everybody got the Zion Williamson jersey, and you could be missing him for 8 weeks. And it's kind of like, now the conversation is not where could this team go. Now it's when is Zion getting back, and exactly. The team and the rest of the team is an afterthought.
Can you imagine this was almost a Hawks problem?
It'd be bad.
Could you imagine
if,
like,
you drafted him first?
If we had drafted him in the number one pick, and then this week comes up, oh no, Atlanta would have had a riot over this type of 8 weeks.
It's a delay in the development of the team. It's a delay in the chemistry with the teammates. It's a delay in his development throughout the course of his rookie season. So yeah, we'd be going. It would be really bad that you were waiting on the biggest thing since whoever you thought the biggest thing was, and then you weren't going to have it, and then you weren't going to have it for about 2 months.
They always said that when it comes to these injuries, and especially with his athleticism, I'm not saying what isn't, I'm not saying what is, because you actually have to see it on the court in order for you to cast some level of judgment moving forward. But sometimes with these injuries, with that weight plus that athleticism, every time he's explosive, going up, coming down, going up, coming down, that first step, going, like, the pressure on those knees and on those joints, That's rough.
I've heard an older Jalen Rose say, like, at a certain point, you stop trying to go for those dunks. Why? Because you don't even fear going up or the contact from the other guys. You fear coming down on your legs. Yeah. That's what he's going to have to deal with his whole career. Coming down on those legs, how much pressure is it taking on him?
What's best case scenario with this right now?
I'd say he gets healthy and finishes off the rest of the season, and he's 18 points a game and 9 rebounds a game, and he lives up to the expectations, and this was just a blip on the radar. That's best case scenario.
Yeah, he.
What's worst case scenario?
He missed the season.
He comes back. He's injured again. Have to wait till next year.
And he turns into Greg Oden.
There are questions going into the offseason. Is he another Greg Oden? Was there something before that wasn't revealed? Everybody's saying that there's no problem, there's no problem, there's no problem. His weight is not an issue. Now you have questions. And it's everything but basketball that you start talking about when you start talking about Zion Williams.
Let me ask y'all this. So from a front office perspective, so let's say you're David Griffin, GM for the Pelicans. If you see that, if you have this on your radar right now, Zion Williamson is out for the next 6 to 8 weeks. Is it the worst case scenario to put him on ice? Figure out how do we work with this? How do we get him to where he is as fine-tuned as he can be? We've never seen an athlete like this. We've never had to deal with this type of situation. Let's take our time. Let's not rush him back and shoot for 2020.
I think if you're the GM, is it the worst-case scenario? No. Because I think, like you said, you got to make sure this is a different type. This is like a rare jewel that you found this is the only jewel that you've ever found in the world like this.
You got to handle it with
delicacy.
You
have to handle it with care. Yes, I know you want to see him. But imagine if we put him back on the court earlier than what? And then he gets hurt again and you've done extensive damage to his knee or something else. Now you're looking at it like, David Griffin, why'd you put him back out here? He's a rare player. You should have let him get healthy. So let's not get to that. Let's have some foresight rather than deal with the hindsight and say, you know what? Let's hold off. Let's get him as healthy as possible. Let's let our medical department and our trainers get him right. Let's figure out what we need to do because he is different. He is something we've never seen before. And we're in the position to show that we can deal with it.
And there are no expectations. They're expected to, you know, be the fourth seed. They're expected to go to the NBA Finals. This is the first leg of their rebuild and their future of what they think is going to be a great team. So really there's no rush to get him back. They're not expected to be better than the top 8-7 teams in the Western Conference. They'll be looking to sneak into the playoffs anyway, pie in the sky if Zion Williamson was healthy.
But you were still looking for him to put butts in the seats, and you're already talking about 8 weeks that's not going to be able to happen.
And I still think you can get butts in the seats.
This is how you're going to get butts in the seats, because the greatest chant in all these games is going to be, where is Zion? That's what you're going to hear everywhere, because everybody's going to be looking for him. Then as they got Zoe, they got Drew Holiday, they got some great pieces there, but everybody's going to be focused on, where is Zion? Is he even on the bench? That's what's going to happen with
it's true. And I think sometimes, and rightfully so, when fans spend money, they have a right to wonder where, you know, the guy is that I spent money to see. Where is he? When is he coming back? But I also think with fans is they're so quick. We're so quick to the gun that we don't understand the other aspect of it. Why? Because you can't fire fans. David Griffin can be fired by the way that he handles this one way or another. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I know you want to see him. But I guarantee you, you'll appreciate me a whole lot more when he comes back and he's a lot fully healthy than for me listening to the crowd and he comes back at 75% and then he gets hurt again. Now he's out for much longer than what he would have been.
I just want to see a young fella get healthy and get a chance to get out there and not have to have the rain cloud of negativity. Will he ever work? Will he be a bust? Was he overrated? Is he too big? I just want to see him play, because it'll be better for everybody, because he's got such a great spirit. He seems like he's such a great kid. And if he is this unique athlete that we all believe his potential can bear out to be, then we'll all be better to get a chance to see him play.
So I asked that question because that exact plan worked for the Sixers. Number one pick, draft Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons don't play.
Fair enough.
Next year, number one pick, draft Markelle Fultz. Didn't work out, but you get the plan. You get the plan, though.
You missed.
But I'm just saying. Exactly.
Yeah.
But they did flip him into some other prospects. Yeah. So keep in mind, I wouldn't be completely against letting Zion just ride out 2019 on the bench.
Or even if not riding out 2019, just waiting until he just, even if he misses half the season.
So be it.
Just wait.
So be it.
Just wait until you get fully healthy.
So if you're the Pelicans, you really gonna use that as your pitch? Like, look what happened with the Sixers. Like, they had their star players who sat out a year, 2 years.
Blake Griffin.
And, yeah, you're gonna try and pitch that to New Orleans that, hey, it might not be here right now, but be patient with us. He'll be on the floor eventually 100%, and then you'll see what we can really do.
I think it's one of those situations where –
My thing is this. You basically had that same situation with AD. How many full seasons has AD played in the league since he's been in? How many times has he been injured? How many playoffs have they been to when he was healthy? He had to go and get Boogie just to get into the playoffs.
This is true. But I do think it's a delayed gratification type of thing.
Fans ain't about delayed gratification.
Anthony Davis has never played 82 games.
Exactly.
Right, he's not. But,
he's never played in more than 75 games.
But whether they like it or not, this is where you are as the New Orleans Pelicans. Fans complaining is not going to bring Zion back.
That's where you are, but that's where you were not supposed to be. When you made this move to get rid of AD and to go hard to get Zion, the goal was not to be right back to where you were with AD.
I get it, but that is also the game that we play. Guys get injured.
Okay, and as fans, you're going to be disgruntled.
You can be disgruntled. You have that right, but what's your next move as a fan? Are you not going to go to the games?
That's what's going to end up happening if y'all keep on like this, and you're going to find New Orleans trying to find a new town.
I get it, but so would you want them to prematurely put him back out if he's not fully healthy with the risk of losing him for a longer period of time?
I would have wanted you to do what Houston was saying at the beginning of last season. Zion ain't that deal. You don't need to go get him. I'd much rather you go get R.J. Barrett, Ja Morant, or Cam Reddish or somebody
else. Because guess what?
That's what I was saying
last
year.
If it was one of those guys in the same situation, people are going to want to know, well, where's my first round pick? Where's R.J.?
Those guys are playing. Those guys are playing, and he's not.
But I'm saying because you get hurt in this league, just like you do in any sport, what if it was those guys in the same situation with a Pelicans jersey on? You
have the same question. Because those guys aren't 6'6", 290 pounds. It would not have been the same situation.
Which is all the more reason why you have to be cautious with this, and fans are going to be upset, yes, but fans also are not the ones who have to make that decision.
Me being cautious means I'm not going to make the decision to go on the high risk dude of Zion Williams when I could get just as much reward out of a Ja Morant or R.J. Barrett.
Do you know that?
I kind of feel that way because I'm looking at those.
You feel that way right now?
Yes, I feel that way right now because you look at those two guys, who's going to be the rookie of the year? It's going to be one of them. More
now
likely.
Because Zion ain't playing.
But why ain't he playing for the exact same stuff we were saying last year? The boy's too big and he ain't built for that. Yeah, his legs ain't built for that.
But you're not
that's
gonna
a hot
not
sports opinion.
Yeah, but you're not gonna not take Zion Williams.
Right, that's the
you
problem.
You can't not take Zion.
I said it last year. I wasn't taking him, and I'm so glad that they didn't.
Ladies and gentlemen, the contrarian of the show.
I'm sorry. I'll continue to be that. Okay, whatever. I didn't want him last year, and I darn sure don't want him now.
Yeah, but that's right now. We'll see how it pans out. Man might just be hurt for 6 weeks and have a great Hall of Fame career. He might have a whole bunch of games he misses, so we'll have to see how it plays out. Michael Jordan, he left his opinion on the Today Show. Look, we all have opinions. I thought the GOAT was wrong on this one when he was asked about Steph Curry. He said he's not a Hall of Famer yet. He's not a Hall of Famer right now. Yes, he is, Mike. Yes, he is. If he showed up tomorrow and said, I'm not showing up anymore for the Warriors, he would be going into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame.
Mike, you gotta let that hate go. Mike, I love you, and we understand that you're the greatest. Like, but to say another guy is a Hall of Famer does not do anything to your greatness. You watching the same thing we watch. Matter of fact, you watch it from a better position than we do. You sitting up there in the owner's box. He's from your city.
His daddy is down there.
Do you need to go talk to Dale?
Games? Yeah.
Does Dale need to tell you something? What have we seen as fans that you have not been privileged enough to see?
The greatest shooter in the world.
You're gonna make people angry if you take any player they think. If you say Russell Westbrook isn't a Hall of Famer, or if you say James Harden isn't a Hall of Famer.
Dwight Howard is a Hall of Famer.
Yes, he is. If you say Dwight Howard isn't a Hall of Famer and somebody doesn't agree, they're gonna be upset. This is ridiculous.
How many points does Steph Curry go for against Charlotte?
Goodness.
I hope he drops 65.
Outside of the fact that he's every time he goes there, he's going back home, so he wants to put on the show.
He's going to put on a special Michael Jordan invitation show.
I got a special for his
airness.
Stand by for that game in Charlotte. I'm telling you. But Michael Jordan sounds like an old school rapper that hates new school rap. It's like, y'all will never be what I am. I'm not trying to be. I'm trying to be just as good, but something different.
Or, yes, he is the type of guy, like the old school rapper who hates new school rap, but he's now, you know, he came around to Kobe. He came around to LeBron. Like, he's okay with certain guys in the new school that kind of remind him of him. Steph don't remind him of him. Steph is a whole different type of player that has made a whole different type of impact that has changed the game in a different type of way. So you got old school rappers who hate new school guys. They like a few of them that can actually, he can spit. You know, he kind of remind me a little bit of myself. But this other guy over here who's making waves and can rap a little bit, may not rap as well as these other guys. Yeah, he good, but he ain't these other dudes over here. So that's the old school guy that he sounds like.
The hate was real strong with that one, man.
He was drinking before he came
on. He's one of the greats of all time right now. If he stays healthy, he is going to pass the greatest three-point shooters, Reggie Miller and Ray Allen, in a couple of years. He might do it next year. We have to stop with the old head hate. What we need to do is just say, you had a group of guys in your era that you would take, and you're not going to let anybody talk badly about them. And then identify the players that are in this generation, say, you know what? These guys are doing it for their generation. And leave it at that. This whole, they haven't come up to the bar, or they couldn't beat us in a pickup game. That's fine. This is ridiculous.
Because you know what? I'm going to be honest. You know, we look at that, you know, the 50 greatest players of all time, and we know it alters every year because you're adding guys, and right, you're adding guys, other guys drop off. But, you know, people always talk about the fictional pickup game. If it was this team versus that team, this player versus this player. There are some middle-of-the-road guys in the NBA, and this is not to be disrespectful to any Hall of Famers, because they did what they did. They won the championships. They made the all-pros and all defensive teams. But there are some middle-of-the-road guys, maybe middle to, you know, B-level guys in the league when it comes to talent. Who can take down some of these Hall of Famers?
Yeah.
If you want to talk about playing one or having this guy versus this guy, because as you would expect, the game has changed and it has become better. Guys have become more skilled. You know, at one point in time, putting the ball between your legs was like, oh my God, what was this? Now you got guys between the legs, behind.
These old school dudes. Step back.
Right. These old school guys couldn't deal with that. These old school guys couldn't have dealt with that.
They couldn't imagine hopping on one leg and not being a travel.
Yeah, but see, now I got to defend old school because of the style that people play, the game was different. Ain't no way in the world Steph Curry and James Harden and Russell Westbrook, first of all, they wouldn't all be playing 82 games anyway, because if Rick Mahorn and Bill Laimbeer and some guys that just played the game a different way when the game was allowed to be played differently, you were going to be picking yourself and your teammates were going to be scooping you up off the floor.
True facts.
So the fact you can't touch anybody anymore also helped. What if you couldn't touch Michael Jordan? What if you couldn't touch Magic Johnson? What if you couldn't touch Isaiah Thomas? Where would they be in the record book? So that's why I say you can't say what somebody couldn't do against another era. I'm saying this. Michael Jordan was wrong.
He's wrong.
And hopefully he'll issue an apology. And I said, I know the man. I've been around the man. He won't.
When's the last time you ever heard Michael Jordan apologize?
Wait on that.
He won't. So that's that. Thoughts just briefly on LeBron getting a little flack for not stepping up for Daryl Morey with his comments about staying with Hong Kong on Twitter that just really cost the NBA and the Rockets a lot of money. They're talking about significant drop in the salary cap because of a loss of revenue. So that's going to impact the money people in the NBA make and people yet to come into the NBA make next year and maybe for years to come because of a tweet. My opinion is that the people that are saying that LeBron James is a hypocrite for not standing up with Daryl Morey and trying to be quiet because he and other players have business ventures and he's a hypocrite. Okay, That's the worst you can say. He's a hypocrite on this one. I also say it is not LeBron James's duty to fight for everything and everybody around the world. He picks and chooses the things that are close to his heart, that are close to the things he thinks can get corrected by his standing on it and him partnering up with people who agree with him. And it is not his charge to save everybody on the planet.
I think he picks and chooses his battles very well, not necessarily because it's personal to him, but because of how it can affect his trajectory as far as his career, whether it be in-game or post-game, post-career. LeBron is probably one of the most methodical men out there. Like, everything about him is put in place how he wants it to be. Like how you were saying before the show, Book, them dominoes are set up, he ain't gonna just let them fall over. He's gonna knock that one to where they all fall in place how they should. He's done that his whole career. This is just another one of those steps. Like, I'm not gonna touch that international money. Why? Because you really can't do nothing but mess up international money. It's there, and all you can do is just take away from it. He's gonna speak out on stuff here in the States. Why? Because it is stateside, and he knows how our community will back him up with that. But we don't care about what's going on in China, so whether he agrees with it or not ain't going to affect him. Why would he speak up? Shaq said it. Shaq came out and said it straight up. I support him, but for Shaq, it's not going to affect his money. He got a statue over there. LeBron, you ain't got that yet. You're not that dude over there like that. So you want to still kind of walk on eggshells with it because, you know, there's still future endeavors that you could still have.
And people, again, I just, the people who are trying to stand up and call LeBron out and trying to make an equivalency to what Kaepernick did or what LeBron and the Heat have done and other players who have stood up for injustices, they are doing things that are dear to their hearts that impact them and that they see wrong in this country. Right. And so taking what somebody did on an international scale and trying to equate that to injustices that people are identifying in this country to me is wrong. What Daryl Morey did, he took his Twitter account and said something that was important to him to say, but he messed up some money. So what he did was interfere in the business practice of the National Basketball Association. That to me is different, maybe I'm wrong, than what other people or what LeBron James has done or not done.
I think you hit the nail on the head right there, home team, because it's two, in my eyes, it's two separate issues. You got the one issue of what's going on with the NBA and, you know, China pulling their money away. That affects everyone associated with the NBA because now you're talking about we're not getting as much money, so I can't pay you as much money, you know. So that's an easy concept to get. But then the other side of it is, you know, LeBron is not some, you know, there's not a LeBron signal that you could just shoot in the air and say, LeBron, come defend us from this social injustice. That's not how it works. You know, it's what he sees fit in putting his time and energy towards defending is what he defends and what he sees, you know, as fit. But just because he didn't come to someone's defense, that can't be held against him. I don't see how that's the part that really gets to me, like how you're upset with him because he didn't come to the defense of someone when that's not at all how it should be expected to be.
That's not his mission.
And the crazy part about it is with a lot of athletes, it's funny, you know, about this China situation because it's damned if you do, damned if you don't when it comes to a lot of athletes. When they do speak up on things that they're passionate about and is near and dear to their hearts, which, you know, Trayvon Martin, you know, the whole I can't breathe, you know, thing. And we want athletes to stand on something because they're role models. And when they do stand on something that other people may not deem, quote unquote, as important based off their lifestyle, they get criticized. But then when they don't say certain things about other stuff, they still get criticized. I'm like, well, what? You can't have it both ways. You can't knock somebody for speaking up about something and then turn around and then knock them again because they don't want to speak about something. And then another thing, you know, I'm seeing on I've seen a lot of tweets, especially in China, about racial slurs against LeBron James, calling him the very thing that a lot of Caucasian people have called black people here in the States. So now I'm sitting here wondering, we always talk about how people view the Chinese. Well, how do the Chinese view people that look like us? So It's funny to now see that when LeBron does not stand up or say certain things that they don't like, how they now, you know, retort to racial slurs and talking about him like he's some type of dog.
Yeah, but you can't castigate everybody in China because some people said something on social media.
And you're going to have racism everywhere.
Because that's going to exist.
That's,
you're
right. That's everywhere. So.
You're right. But I just, and I'm not, because it's not everybody here.
Right.
But what I'm saying is that is interesting, because it's interesting the route that some like to take because someone does not necessarily agree with them or does not necessarily speak up for them.
My question is, all the people who think LeBron James is a hypocrite and Daryl Morey didn't get the support of LeBron James, where are they now? That was a week ago. It was hot, but are you, what are you doing to help the people in Hong Kong? Well, I would ask them, you got an iPhone? Huh? What do you think those batteries in there? You want to stay with Hong Kong, get another phone. You got an iPad? You got a MacBook? Huh? Yeah, everybody's being a bunch of hypocrites. LeBron James didn't do anything wrong. He's a businessman, too, and a lot of people need to sit down and shut up and let LeBron James do what he's been doing, which is be a significant activist off the court. That's my opinion.
In the immortal words of Too Short and Jay-Z, it was all good just a week ago.
Just a week ago.
Just a week ago.
Well, we have the Hawks coming up. They will start in Detroit to take on the Pistons, and then they have their home opener Saturday when they take on the Orlando Magic. Things I'm looking for: cleaning up the turnovers, cleaning up the defense, seeing if Trae Young and John Collins can be a formidable 1-2 punch consistently. Not one guy up or one guy down or one guy leading the season, or like Trae, it was his rookie season, so no need to criticize, but coming on strong at the end. Both of those guys from start to finish being consistent, the left and the right hand coming with the two pieces to knock out anybody standing in front of them.
I did not like what I saw from John Collins in the preseason.
Okay, fair enough.
I was not a huge fan of – I was looking for more. I mean, from year two to year three, I'm looking for a jump. Really big jump from year one to year two for him. I wasn't pleased with what I saw from their cohesiveness in the preseason. Biggest thing I'm going to be looking for is what you just touched on, home team, is the turnovers. Making sure Trae Young and all the rest of the young ball handlers – can keep their hands on the ball. Outside of that, I'm looking for an up and down season. You know, just being realistic, give me 30 to 33 and I'll be good. I don't see much more than that, but I can see some improvements even with that being the number, though.
I know off air, Houston and I talked about this. He said one of the things he didn't want to see is, you know, the rookies be flustered. And I said, but that's what rookies are. They're going to have moments where they're flustered because, like I said, they're not – this isn't college. This isn't you being recruited from high school to college where you're the five-star recruit and now you're better than most of the kids in the nation. And you can just accumulate all this talent and we're going to go all the way to the NCAA tournament. No. This is the NBA where everybody's talented. Everybody goes through the rigor. Everybody's going to fight and claw each and every night. Why? Because a lot of it is based on effort. On the defensive end, we talked about how the Clippers – you know, do their thing on the defensive end. You going to run into that as rookies. You're a man, but you're going to run into another grown man as well who has more experience in this league than you do, and you're going to be flustered. But it's about how those guys answer it.
I think flustered might have been the wrong word that I used at the time, because I put it like this. I'd much rather see what DeAndre is doing in his rookie season this early on. I'd much rather see that type of mentality.
But that's the preseason.
Okay, that's the preseason, but still, in your warm-ups, I don't need to look at one player and look like, okay, he's in form. Okay, he might miss a couple, but he's okay. And then the other guy in that same shoot-around looking like, oh, my God, man, come on, get it. Like, you're really frustrated with the fact you're not making shots in warm-ups. I shouldn't see that. Why? Because you are a professional at this point, and at the end of the day, you should know that it's just warm-ups. It's cool. If you look flustered to me in warm-ups, then what are you going to look like in the game when there's real defense on you? Like, that's my thing. So just be a little bit more mature with how you handle the ups and downs of the season.
Absolutely. But that maturity comes with time, and it comes with age. Even with DeAndre is going to have his moments. Now, he may not necessarily show it on his face.
That's what I want to see.
But he's definitely going to have moments that are going to show us, going to be like, where is he? Why? Because he's a rookie.
I think we have a lot to look forward to with some of the new additions. I'm looking forward to see what DeAndre Bembry brings as the hype and the energy guy. Now that Kent Bazemore is gone, that was a role he filled when he was in the prime of his career as a Hawk. Now we have a new energy guy, hustle man is what I call him. So DeAndre Bembry bringing in the steals and the energy with the second unit. And then what, you know, Cam Reddish and Evan Turner and Jabari Parker are going to be bringing, as well as Damian Jones, you know, a guy who's a big guy who can run, can shoot the three. I think our second unit could be as big of a story towards the end of the season if the Hawks are close to getting a playoff spot, if that turns out to be the case.
I think our second unit could actually be just as impactful as our starting unit. Maybe not as impactful. That's
you got more
a lot of hyperbole. There's a lot more experience. And that's why I say that, because you just listed off veterans, which is – and don't get me wrong, the Hawks have had veterans, but they've been a different tier of a veteran. You know, when you bring in an Evan Turner, a Jabari Parker, a Damian Jones, those are guys that have experience in the league, you know, to where you can lean on them. They can come in and fill in the spot for one of the young guys on a night where they don't have things rolling. So you can bring in someone that is capable of doing a little bit more. You know, I'm going to say that those, the two of the guys that I just listed between Jabari Parker and Evan Turner, they may be a little bit more offensively skilled than a Kent Bazemore that you're bringing in that role. So I think they could, it's just going to take them a little bit, a while to get well together. I think they're going to be able to do some things, but it's going to be a learning process.
And they're young, even though they're veterans. You know, Jabari Parker, right. It's funny, everybody thinks he's 29. 24? He's 24.
Yeah. 24
Damian
old.
Jones is 24. So exactly. Even the new additions, you know, Evan Turner's 29. He's the old guy, you know, in the room right now. But I'd rather have him on the floor last 6 minutes of a game, take care of the ball, can get in the paint, can make some good decisions, not afraid to take the big shot. Mm-hmm. But it's still a young team. So I'm looking for cleaning up the turnovers, getting some better defense, running the dickens out of folks, because our pace should still be pretty high. And then I also want to see the relationship between Trae Young and Lloyd Pierce. That on those 1-for-4, 1-for-6 starts to the three-pointer, his coach going to tell him, I need you to move in a few feet, young fella, because he has been on a record, Coach Lloyd Pierce. He wants his three-point percentage to go up. Not telling him not to take them, but take the right shot, the better shot more often, so that you can help yourself and help the team. I want to see how that relationship gels throughout the course of the season.
And I think on the smarter shots, the smarter three-pointers, even if he's not knocking them down early, I think Lloyd Pierce can live with that, because at least it's the smart shot. Right. Like you said, it's those shots, half you know, court. Those three-point shots where it's kind of like, all right, you didn't necessarily – if you make it, it's cool because you get the reaction from the crowd. But – it's not necessarily the smart shot to take. He can live with you missing the smart ones, because eventually he feels as though those are going to go down, versus you always taking the 50-footer when you don't necessarily have to.
The biggest word that I think I heard from Coach Pierce this offseason was consistency. Seeing consistency from the guys, making sure that, like you said, and being efficient. Like, it's not all about being a 20-plus point scorer and, you know, double-double all night, but if, like with John Collins' case, 19-19, if you consistently can put that up for me, then I know what I can work with, and we can build off of that. But if you're erratic and you, like, he gave us a goose egg in, like, the second preseason game. I can't see goose eggs. You can't have a game where you literally just don't make a single field goal and you're my power forward.
I think that we're going to see a big season from DeAndre Hunter as well. I think that by the end of this year, DeAndre Hunter will be one of Coach Lloyd Pierce's favorite Atlanta Hawks, just because he's gonna do the things that Coach Pierce asks players to do without being asked. He's a defensive-minded cat, so I think that you don't have to run plays for him. All of his offense is just going to come naturally within the game. But on the defensive side, he takes the initiative to lead by example on that side. So I'm going to keep a close eye on him, because I think I might have the highest expectations of him outside of any other Hawk right now.
Rightfully so.
I got a question. All right, because at this point with this team, Trae Young is to be looked at as basically like the lead dog. He's your captain of this team.
His team.
How do we really feel about him being in that role at this point? I still feel like it's kind of early.
It's not all on him, but it's his team. So he's got to learn how to be a leader. He's got to learn how to lead us in scoring if your shot is off. He's got to learn, if you do have a bad shooting night, how to get 10, 11 free throw attempts. Those are the kinds of things, that's for me, that I'm looking for. But, you know, this whole we don't have a star, and we're all in this together, it's his team, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people around the league, even with teams coming into town last year, the one player that they always talked about was Trae Young's going to be a heck of a player. So the league recognizes your talent and your ability. You can't not take ownership of this team when the rest of the league recognizes your talent, recognizes your ability. The city knows whose team this is. So I think Trae definitely has to take ownership of this. Say, you know what? I know we got veteran leadership, and I know we have guys who have gone on to do other things, but this is my squad. My city. And I'm going to take ownership. And that's what you need if he's going to become a star. You can't have a star as well, like, well, you know, it's somebody's team one night, it's my team. No. This is my squad. I'm going to take responsibility for good and bad, and I'm going to make sure we correct it and rectify it.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Drop Step Podcast. We'll be into a week of basketball next time we convene for Book the Hook, for Houston, for B-Dog, Brandon Harper. We want to say shout out to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and to the fine, decent folks at Shaq Fu Radio. We want to say thank you. We'll see you next time on the Drop Step Podcast.
We out.
Already. Hey, y'all, we got plenty of ways for y'all to check us out, so make sure that you go subscribe on either Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, or even Shaq Fu Radio, which plays our podcast every Wednesday and Saturday night. You can also catch us on YouTube channels for the Drop Set Podcast, 680 The Fan, and Atlanta Sports Set. And last but not least, make sure you check out the Drop Step on IG, Twitter, and Facebook.